You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Shouldn't you be at home?
Saved a penalty here on Wednesday, and he saves another one!
Delightful ball again by Barnes, McMahon in for Beardsley!
Ken Rice with the throw, headed on by Devon White. Peacock's there, and Peacock with a magnificent goal!
Now, you know him better than anybody probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hatton!
No!
Hello and welcome to Now That's What I Call Quickly Kevin. It's volume 9. I'm Chris Skoll and joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And mine and Josh's very own Jimmy Fivebellies. It's Mr. Michael Marden.
Hello.
What qualities do you think you share with Sir Jimmy Fivebellies?
Sir Jimmy Fivebellies.
Just knighted him.
Well, Josh does throw darts at me when I run down the road.
Do you see Jimmy Fivebellies as a sad figure or as a positive figure?
Sad. It makes me really, increasingly, it makes me really sad when I hear stories about him.
Michael, he's doing well. He's been running marathons for charities, lost a lot of weight. He's in top form. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy for him.
He's a success story.
Here's a question. If when you had been 22, your best mate had got signed by a Serie A team and he'd said, for like your wage now, would you just come out and be my mate? Would you have gone?
Absolutely. Would you not?
Well, you're kind of putting your life on hold a bit. You're losing your 20s. What are you doing during training? You're some kind of Stepford wife to Paul Gascoigne. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Stepford wife eating dog poo and mince pies. That's what I'm saying.
But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's, I suppose, a fun adventure. But, like, I don't know whether does it happen anymore.
I mean, I think footballers just have a much bigger entourage that follow them around all the time. Like that time we saw Ronaldo in Ibiza.
Yeah.
But with the power of hindsight, I think I would regret that decision. But at 20 years old, and my friend going, yeah, do you want to come and earn more money than you ever earned in your life, just dicking around playing GoldenEye and FIFA with me? I'd be like, yes, please.
Yeah.
I saw an interview with Rio Ferdinand this week, and he talked about going round Cristiano Ronaldo's house when he played for Man United. And he said he went in the house, and he said there was like 15 people there. And he said to Cristiano, like, who's this guy? And he was like, oh, this is my kind of dietitian. This is my fitness trainer. Rio said it was the first time he'd heard of a footballer who had kind of created a team, invested in a team for himself outside of the club. And that all these people were kind of living in his house.
I'd have thought that would be like counterproductive. Unless the club's doing nothing, I'd have thought the club would want to control all that. Do you know what I mean? But then whenever you see Ronaldo, all those pictures on Instagram, obviously he's got his muscly son, but like this.
Very muscly son.
His very muscly son. But I think Cristiano Ronaldo is someone who doesn't want to be alone because the voices will start. Do you know those people?
Yeah. I think when he puts his head on his pillow at night, Cristiano Ronaldo is fighting some real demons.
So he's always got his dietitian around because he doesn't want to be left alone with his thoughts. We all have that to an extent. Like, some people are better solitary than others. I know, you know, on this lockdown, I've certainly found that I do need some solitary time. But, like, there is, like, do you know what I mean? That I think Cristiano Ronaldo is somebody who doesn't like to be alone.
Such an interesting take.
You wouldn't get that on a BT Sport, would you? I reckon this. I think this is probably the only podcast where a discussion of Cristiano Ronaldo's dietitian is swiftly pulled back to how tough people find it on solitary in their own mind.
Well, you say that. I think give it 6 weeks, and the Athletic will be covering this definitely.
I wonder what score are filling the pages with.
What score?
Isn't it Score? Or am I thinking of? Shoot. Oh, my God. Wasn't there one called Score as well, though?
Well,
God, this is a digression, isn't it?
I suppose there is an element where now we're all... Maybe that's why it's in my head, but you're all kind of facing up to yourself a bit more than you ever have. I don't know whether Henry Winter's finally having to live with himself.
Speaking of sort of being alone and solitary, like, this is a tenuous link, but... One of the things I've been enjoying the past couple of weeks is like looking at the kind of analytics of Quickly Kevin online and like where people listen. Yeah. In the past, I've always been interested in that kind of that one listen that we'll get somewhere in the world that's really remote. But you can always write it off as going, well, someone was probably just on holiday. But obviously the world's on lockdown now, so people aren't traveling anywhere. But there are people listening to our show, and like it's only once a week in places where it's one single solitary listen for that week, and then that's it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to look all around the world where we've only got one listener during this lockdown. And we got someone in Paraguay.
Louis Chilavert.
We've got a single fan in Kazakhstan.
Wow.
We've got a single fan in Djibouti in East Africa, and a single fan in Mongolia. I would love to know if you're listening. Who are you?
Like, well, I suppose if you work that, because... Like, if you work somewhere and you've set your life up there, there will be, you know, Brits abroad working there, I suppose. And it's not like when Mary and Joseph had to go home for the census. Like, we are still being locked down to where we are. We're not having to return to where we were born. I think it is interesting, isn't it? But in my head, it's all just people in the... in the British consulate, do you know what I mean? Trying to get a taste of home.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Can I just ask a question on that solitary thing, which I think is a good question, is which footballing figure do you think will be dealing best and worst with kind of being left with their thoughts for 2 months with no football?
I think Michael Owen will be fine.
He'll be in that bunker with his Ballon d'Or on, rotating forever.
Just happily watching his Ballon d'Or spin for 2 months. And also, because he's not on TV, it's probably the nicest his Twitter mentions have been for 5 years.
I always thought David Seaman, he always seems like a man very at peace with himself.
Yeah, he'll be very happy.
Yeah, he's so zen. Yeah,
he is zen, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they're both two very good suggestions. So who do you think's really struggling with the lockdown?
I think Jamie Vardy's probably struggling. It's difficult to have a one-man Jamie Vardy party.
Also, the problem Jamie Vardy's got, I've seen the inside of his house. If your cleaner's not coming, that chandelier is going to be an absolute write-off.
What about, do you think Jamie Vardy and Rebecca Vardy be up the stepladders like Only Fools and Horses?
Well, also, Jamie Vardy, because presumably has got a new baby, because Rebecca Vardy was pregnant when all that Twitter thing kicked off. Oh, my word, Jamie Vardy must be having an absolute nightmare. Jamie, if you're listening... our thoughts are with you.
I do want to make a quick clarification for legal reasons. A few minutes ago, I pondered what Score magazine are filling their pages with, and it turns out the Score magazine is actually a pornographic magazine, so therefore it's very much business as usual for them. I'm obviously confused with a Shoot magazine.
Shall we have some correspondence?
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
So I've got a couple of Football Manager ones, if you want them, Michael. And Chris, obviously.
Yes, please.
Philip Taylor, Championship Manager, Regen Names. This is a fun one. What's your favourite Regen name? Short but simple one, this. But I played a game of Championship Manager 97-98, of course, and had a very successful time with Manchester United, Juventus and Barcelona. Come on, mate, challenge yourself.
People who just manage the big teams.
Oh, like, Alex Brooker starts as Arsenal. Have a fucking day off. Come on. Anyway, this is great. But Philip Taylor said, by the time I took the poison chalice of England manager, my three favourite regem names were Gary Grobbelaar, Rudolf Redknapp and Alan Letizier. does anyone else have any good names as good as that from about Philip Taylor in Manchester? Yeah.
I had a Nigel Zidane. He was awful, but I loved his name so much I just kept playing him.
We should try and create a team of the regen names. So if we note down Gary Groblar, Rudolph Redknapp, Alan Letitier, and they've got to play in the original position of the surname that they've got with Nigel to Dan. So send yours in, real ones only. Do you want one more quick Football Manager one that relates to this?
Yeah, why not?
A forgotten feature of Football Manager from Joshua Pixgill. I'd just completely forgotten this. So he points out a feature I'd completely forgotten, which was the set nickname feature in the later games of... What was that? Well, you could just change a player's name to a nickname.
I used to do it.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I would only do it to opposing players that either scored against me or I didn't like. Like, I lost an FA Cup final to Arsenal, and Dennis Bergkamp scored the winner, so I changed his name to Dolphin Face.
So what? It would just say that when he came up?
Yeah, it would just come up.
What was the point of that feature?
I don't know.
It's such a weird feature. Did anyone use it for an actual useful reason? It's such a strange feature that I'd completely forgotten. So if you want to get in touch, this is how to do it.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
First up, Dara O'Brien talks to us about Jack Charlton and the legend of Ireland in the 90s.
Dara, everyone's got a good Jack Charlton story. Have you heard
anything? Oh my God. No.
Have you met him?
No, I never met him. I never met him in the time.
There's one story I've heard, and maybe you could shed some light on it. And it was that Jack Charlton obviously spent a lot of time in Irish pubs, and he would only pay by cheque because he knew the landlord wouldn't cash it in. Yeah. They would frame it and put it behind the bar. And that there's pubs all over Ireland with a cheque from Jack Charlton framed behind the bar. I wondered if you'd ever seen one. Or
I haven't seen one, and I'm not sure if that's... It's a great idea, but I'm sure there's an element of like, ha, 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 that's very funny, but also... because, you know, like, you've been really, as we say around Flahulach, which is the Irish for generous, with the whole, oh, the drinks are on me, but really? I think you're taking a lot... You know, I don't know if that's the thing, but what you do, you'd photocopy the cheque. I'm not sure if that's the thing. It's a nice idea. Because he certainly could, by the end of it, he could bask in generosity from Irish people.
So he was an Englishman that got accepted. Did you care about the other players, the Andy Townsends, the...
Oh, God,
Tony
no. Kessler? No, we were... There was no point at which we... In any way, we're like, oh, I'm not sure this is Irish enough, this team. I don't think, you know, but I don't think I can fully enjoy this system. a question mark resides over Andy Townsend. Oh, Andy's ruining it for me. Tony Cascarino, by the way, as we know, the great thing about Tony Cascarino was, turns out, no Irish connection whatsoever. It's fabulous. I have occasional contact with him on Twitter, like whatever. Great guy. Sounds like a fantastic guy. Zero Irishness at all. Was adopted as well.
He was adopted, there's a story around halfway through his Irish career, he discovered he wasn't Irish, and Andy Townsend said, just keep it under your hat.
Yeah. Why would you fucked about in the situation? It'll all come out in the wash. So no, we had no problem with that whatsoever. I mean, there's people who got very kind of po-faced about the whole thing, but actually no at all. And I would like to portray that as a general Irish, you know, openness and evolving as a nation and welcoming to, you know, and willing to put aside like the dark burden of history as long as it bolstered our midfield. He was just, nobody thought to troll. And also we're very good at using our diaspora and embracing our diaspora. The first we're like, oh yeah, yeah, grand. Okay, this is the upside to this. We've just lain sleeper agents all over the world. We can now call them in. And they all return
Andy
now.
Townsend well, is the absolute.
I knew there was a lot of English players in the Irish team, but I didn't realise it was like official policy. There's a quote from Jack Charlton that said, "You want me to compete with the best in the world? I've got to have the fucking best in the world. And it's not here in Ireland that I can find it. I've got to go to England to find it."
Tony Cascarino.
Cascarino. Kaz. A word against Kaz. Of all the many, many moments that are particularly joyous, 1988 when we got to it, and the first game.
Against England.
Against England. The Stuttgart, 88.
where did you wa-
watch this?
I was there, of course. And we all were. I was 16. I watched it in my house. I got contacted by Amy Lawrence to do, say, would you talk to us about 1989? We're doing the documentary about 1989 and maybe the story about watching it. And I was in my front room on my own. I was 17. I wasn't like, you know, oh yeah, I remember we all hired a van and we drove to, like, you know, when I was there at Anfield. No, I was just in my house watching. But it was, Brady was injured.
Yeah.
And Brady couldn't join the squad. And so Brady got hired by ITV as a kind of pitchside reporter. And they went to Brady before the match and they saying, Liam, just a great day. Just a great day for Ireland to be here, isn't it? Isn't it a great day? Just to be part of all this.
Lovely day out.
Yeah. That must be, look at them singing. It must be amazing for you. And Brady was fairly tight-lipped about and like clearly not enjoying the tone of it. And then it came back at halftime, and Brady had this huge grin on his face, going, "Yes, now you'd like to talk to me about this." Like, no.
Were you sad to be playing? Were you like, "Oh, not England"? Or was it like,
"Yeah, I thought no." Do you know what? We had no idea because it's years. I mean, the last time we played them was I think we lost a 2-0 in a friendly that Keegan had scored a couple of goals in like about 3-4 years earlier. We were expected not to do well, and that was kind of, in that regard, it was a gamble. But you know, we were so, what are we doing here? It was ridiculous, like, whatever.
Together, Galvin pulling it across, a missed kick by Sansom, in goes Aldridge, and Houghton, 1-0, and Ray Houghton has stopped the breakthrough, and Jack Charlton cannot believe it.
So beating England must have been unbelievable.
Astonishing. Like, it's just the hugeness of the thing and just the eruption of joy. And like, people in cars, driving up and down O'Connell Street, like, whatever. Genuinely, we went Latin American on the whole thing. And it was one of those turns where, when as the matches progressed, RT would send out people to interview people who were out while the games were on, in a kind of a, what are you doing here? And they'd be like, old women walking dogs going, I don't know. And they go, who's out? Like, and they'd spin cameras around empty, deserted streets.
Those classic, in those days, the thing was always the surge of electricity at half time.
Yeah. Cups of tea. Cups of tea.
That was a real 90s story. Yeah.
Next up, Darren Huckabee tells us about playing under notorious long ball manager John Beck and then his time at Newcastle United.
You played briefly under one of the most infamous managers in the lower leagues, John Beck. there's so many stories about this.
They're all true.
Oh, are they?
So, they're all true.
Were you excited to play under John Beck?
No.
I love the idea of John Beck. I just want to read out some of these stories and you can just say whether you saw them or not. He once fined a goalkeeper for throwing it short rather than punting it down the pitch.
Yep, definitely true.
Played a centre-back as a centre-forward because he just wanted a big lump.
That would have been definitely true.
And then deliberately trained on the central bank pitch every day so it would be a complete mess come match day.
Yeah, I've seen him warthogging the pitch on purpose. He used to leave the obviously the sides longer so the ball would stop in the corners.
Yeah.
In one of my first games, he actually threatened to take me off if I came inside and shot. I beat three people, cut inside, had a shot. The keeper saved it, but he caught it.
Yeah.
He pulled me over and said, next time, go down the wing and try and get a corner.
Try and get a
corner?
So
you can get the big lads up. That's the guys on the tree. I only played about three games with him and then I got sold on. But like the ice buckets in the.
Did he throw ice water?
Well, he tried to. Even me at, I don't know, 18, I'm saying, because it's not going to make me better soaking cold or freezing, is it? It's like, but that was all true.
Wow. So what was that one? He would throw ice water on you.
Oh no, you had to run. There was like a gauntlet where you had to run through the shower, and he had the young guys chucking ice water on you before the game to try and
G you up or something.
I don't know what he did, but the thing is, he had success at Cambridge.
With
that, and you know. I don't think it can work everywhere. He must have had some tough old boots in that dressing room. Obviously, Dion and Liam Dace, they played for him at Cambridge, so they might have been all right with it.
Did you share stories with them? Like, did they talk fondly of him? Or
When you're successful, you do anything. I think, especially if you're lower league, you're kind of like, you'll just do anything if it's going to make you successful and bring you a few quid in. So, but it was ridiculous.
Was he scary?
No. No, he wasn't scary, but he just, when you're a manager, you've got to do what your manager says.
Yeah.
The worst thing about it now, he's actually does the FA coaching courses now. Does he? I think he does UEFA B and UEFA A. And I'm thinking, wait, mate, I played for you. So how can you be telling people how to do short passes and dropping in the holes and all that kind of stuff? Come
on. Is he like a kind of, you know, when like someone converts to Christianity or something, totally changes? He's now really into like tiki-taka or like...
Well, it's madness. Because you can't go from one extreme to the other like that.
Yeah. Was it difficult to play in his... Did he have... He had very set kind of ways the team would play then?
You just get it and smash it in the corners. He actually... Because I had played with a lad in... called Matt Carman, I don't know if you can remember him, big centre-half, right. Played for West Brom and Derby, I think. And he was in our youth team, and he was obviously a big lad. And he said, I'm going to build a team around you two. I'm going to get it and smash it in the up to Carbs. He's going to flick it on. I was thinking, this ain't for me. this ain't for me. Even though I went to play for Coventry, and we kind of did the same variation with Dion, but
yeah.
It was slightly different.
a bit cleverer, higher
yeah,
level.
Yeah, no, it was different, and like yeah. I say, it wasn't a mud bath and... The grass was 6 inches longer on the wings.
So you've got this, the grass in the corner of the pitch, the ice chucking over you before the game. Then you find out Newcastle picked up the phone and asked for your services. I bet you couldn't wait to get out, could you?
It's really strange because you're kind of like, I was at a game and he said, oh, you're not playing tonight. Keegan's in the crowd. He wants you to go with him and stay at his house tonight and sort out a deal tomorrow at Newcastle.
How many games had you played at this point?
30 something, 35.
So did you have any idea this was going to happen?
There were rumours that Man United or Newcastle were watching. That's because you don't know, do you? But the scouts they send all the time. And I was playing pretty well. But, you know, it's a big jump from...
Earning a lot of corners, that kind of thing.
Yeah, bottom of the third division, because that's where we were at the time.
Yeah.
To Newcastle and Man United, who were 1 and 2 in the Premier League.
That's mad. So you must have been unbelievably better than everyone around you.
I was probably eye-catching, just because I was quicker and, you know, I was direct and... Like I did all the way through my career, I played the same way basically. Just got a little bit better at doing it when I got a bit older. But I can remember ringing my mate up who was at Lincoln at the time. I said, mate, you ain't going to believe this. I'm actually in Kevin Keegan's bedroom. But not Kevin Keegan's bedroom, but one of Kevin Keegan's other bedrooms. Yeah,
yeah. Did you call from the landline?
No, I had a mobile phone.
What was Kevin Keegan's house like?
It was nice. It was on the estate of Sir John Orr's estate.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. So my dad drove up next day to negotiate. The deal and all this kind of stuff.
So you just went up to his house?
Stayed in his house, yeah.
And what was it like staying in the house?
It was weird.
But was the chat like on the car on the way there?
It was all right, but, you know, a young kid you've not seen much and he's a superstar.
From John Beck to Kevin Keegan in an afternoon.
Yeah, you've got one who literally don't want to play football and one who all he cares about is playing football. It's weird.
Is that the norm to go and stay at a manager's house before you...
Not that I know of.
Did you spend the evening with him, like playing board games or like what?
No, we got there pretty late because after the game it's 10 o'clock. So by the time we drove to Newcastle, it's bedtime and then we're out in the morning. So it was literally go to the bedroom, sleep, off you go.
So you go into that dressing room, you sign for Newcastle, suddenly...
$500,000 as well.
Yeah.
It's a good fee for a bottom division.
It was, yeah. I nearly didn't sign because I was on like £400 a week. That's what I was, got paid at Newcastle.
Really? £100 a week?
Yeah, so I was on £120 at Lincoln.
£120?
Yeah, and obviously I knew for a fact there was people in the Lincoln dressing room who were on £1,000 a week. So I'm like, I go to Newcastle, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, here we go, happy days I'm going to be, and then £400. And I was like to my dad, I can't do it, there's people at Lincoln who are earning twice as much. But my dad said, it's not about the money now, is it? It's about just going and playing. But I got a free car though, I got a free car. So.
That's definitely wonky, isn't it? Because £500,000 transfer fee and £400 a week, that's out of step, surely.
That's what I thought. But my dad was right. He said, this is a chance you can't.
Yeah, they've got you.
Fair play to Keegan, because he actually wanted you to earn it. He didn't just want you to go and have loads of money and start. So you still, your mind was switched on that this was kind of only in the beginning. It's not, you hadn't kind of made it.
Yeah.
And then when you get in the chain room, you see the players you're with, you realise that you haven't made it.
The Shearer, Beardsley, Ginola, Ferdinand, some big characters on slightly more than £400 a week as well.
Something. Yeah, because the club was flying at the time as well. I think they were top of the Premier League. And, you know, Beardsley was one of my heroes as growing up. So to actually just be in the same group, even though kind of not part of it, but still in the same group was amazing for me.
Are they welcoming in that situation?
I can remember my first training session. We did it was 2v2s and 3v3s. And I was on Beardsley's team. And I had one of them things where I scored 3 or 4 goals, you know, in quick succession. And he actually said, wow, we've got a player here. And for him to say that, but to have that as from one of your heroes saying that in a training session, I was like, wow, I kind of made it a bit today.
Were you intimidated at all in training? Or were you like, I'm going to show these guys what I'm made of?
I won't say I was intimidated, but I also knew that they were at a different level to where I'd been at. Mm. You know, because, you know, you play at Lincoln, it's a third division and, you know, you think you're a footballer. And you are, but then you go to a big club and you see proper players and you realise, I've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
And I felt that, you know, with the players I have in front of me, you know, your Asprias, Ferdinand, Shearer, Beardsley, Kitson.
And what's what was Keegan like to play under in that? Because he seemed such an inspiring figure at the time and such a...
I think he just kind of let the players get on with it. You know, he just wanted to attack, and you saw that if he had a defensive bone in the body, he'd have probably won the league that year.
Yeah.
But it was everyone's second favourite team, wasn't it? That's,
yeah.
But it's easy, for training was classic. For forwards, it was brilliant. You know, finishing and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, as an attacking player, it was great to play for him.
What was David Ginola like?
Unbelievably good. Like, mind-blowingly good. He could do everything. He's like 6 foot two, 6 foot three, stacked, good with both feet, looked $1 million.
Great hair.
Great hair. And he was one of the only one in my whole career, really, where every morning he'd go around and shake everybody's hand, whether you were Les Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, or one of the young lads. I was blown away by that.
Is it true that he would like just be smoking cigarettes kind of around the place?
He probably did it a bit sneakily, but I've definitely seen him have a fag.
And finally, comedian Tom Davis talks to us about his beloved West Ham in the 90s.
We always start, have you met a 90s footballer?
Yeah.
I mean, you've met lots.
I've met quite a few. My favourite is Matt Letitia, I think.
Yeah.
I shot a thing with Matt Letitia for Southampton and for Adidas. We went out to Prague together, and Matt would only drink
Malibu
and
it?
Coke.
Malibu, yeah.
So you were just going around to these bars in Prague seeing if they shoot Malibu and Coke. Do you sell this? And I just remember eating like a really big chocolate crepe with him. And chatting to him about 90s football, and he had chocolate around his mush. How do you tell someone that you adored that he's just, yeah. That
was, he's a nice bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, incredible guy. And that was my favourite time of genuine, like, characters were in the game.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about, you know, it before, but, you know, especially as a West Ham fan, it felt at times that, you know, they were an extension of the crowd. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that was, I feel really lucky, because if I'm honest, I still love West Ham. Still go when I can. I still love football.
The crowd's so far away, there's no extension possible.
No, I mean, a fucking hell of an extension. You need a bridge, Josh.
Did you ever feel jealous of Southampton because they had this mercurial player in Matt Letitia that was obviously way too good for them? And West Ham, we had Julian Dix, but we never had like a playmaker, creative type like that.
We had Julian Dix.
We had Julian Dix.
Well, I mean, he was
Kevin Bishop. I suppose as a player, I was more of a Julian Dix. I was more of a sort of set. You know who my favourite player of that time was? And it was weird. It was Tim Breaker. I used to love Tim Breaker. I loved him though. I don't know, because I sat in the chicken mung. I sat in the chicken mung, and like I used to, it was playing right back. And it's a weird thing because Stevie Potts was obviously Stevie Potts, and he sort of came in.
I don't know what that means. But Stevie Potts was obviously Stevie Potts.
Stevie Potts was a legend, right? Yeah, he was.
He played 399 games, scored one goal, and his one goal is the worst goal anyone's ever scored. Like 30 yards, like dribbles along the floor, nutmegs the keeper, and rolls in.
And Tim Breaker came in for him, really. And
why did you love Tim Breaker?
I don't know. He must have been like 6'2", and he's a fullback. I like those players.
Yeah.
I like the sort of players that when you watch, you think, oh, maybe I could have made it.
There's a lot of those at West Ham. Yeah.
So what we were going to go through today was, we were going to say your worst West Ham 11, but then what we've decided is, what was the phrase you used?
Yeah.
Like, shit, but you love them.
Yeah, that's the thing for me with the 90s and football was the characters. And I think it's really sadly lacking. Like, you know, you guys, you've met footballers sort of from the 90s, you've met footballers now, and the stories, the sort of folklore you hear from the 90s, I love that sort of... That heyday of you know, the Dannys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We always say, like, there was much more of a connection with the team then that you lack now. If so, professional. Imagine, no one's going to be talking about Arnautovic like they you talked about Tim Breaker in a second.
No. And I think that goes across the whole team, doesn't it? You know, Trevor Morley, you know, Ian Bishop. And I'm very fortunate to do this for a living, so I've met, you know, I'm friends with Harry, and I've chatted to a few of the older players, and sort of, as you hear, you can't ever imagine ever happening again. And when I was growing up, I grew up around sort of Sutton and Wimbledon and Croydon. So the crazy gang were sort of, you know, when I was 16, 17, they were in their pomp, really. And I mean, that sort of second generation of Peter Fear, Johnny Scales, it was sort of just after fashion, so it had probably been Efanikuku, those guys who sort of,
Warren
Michael
Barton.
Hughes, Warren Barton, Peter Fear I had so many nights out with.
And did you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to go out drinking quite a lot with him. I play sort of Sunday league, and then, you know, they'd be in O'Neill's in Sutton every Sunday. So, and I'd be scaffolding the next day. So you go on the shant with them. And Peter Fear was, I remember Liverpool were looking at Peter Fear. He was a decent right back.
He was in O'Neill's on a Sunday. That's yeah, not yeah. Help the every,
but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was like, yeah, I mean, he was being talked about as being the new Warren Barton at one
Imagine being called the new
what
Warren
I love Barton. About this podcast, it's so niche, but there's people going, oh, yeah, Warren Barton. But right. Not Neil Hardley, yeah. Neil Sullivan. That was.
What know. Was it like going on the lash with them? Were they right. Were they seen as celebrities in the O'Neills?
Yeah, but that's what. Yeah, in O'Neills in Sutton they were. Like, I remember sort of like having like a really. I suppose it probably would have been a maybe 32-10, maybe before even that. Having Peter Fear's number on your phone felt like, you know, like I look at my life now and I think back then that was everything. And it was, and also, like cheers in a way, like walking into O'Neill's in Sutton on a Sunday night and Peter Fear going, Big Chum, you all right? And you're like, yeah, how you doing?
Everybody yeah. knows my name. Would you get excited if Peter Fear texts you now, or is that gone?
I mean, I haven't got the same number because of that. I think he was manager of Crawley Town for a bit. I often think, what happened to Pete? Out of two of us back then, you'd have thought, you know, old Peter Fear, Liverpool, England were looking at him. Yeah. You know, he might have. It's sad for Peter Fear that my life's turned out
odd that you're the one that ended up on a 90s football podcast and Peter Fear can get booked for Love Not Money.
All the people in that O'Neill's and Sutton, you're the one that's been chosen.
But if you do have his number, if you could pass it on. Thank you for listening to Quickly, Kevin. That was some of our best bits. Now, we have a name game going on. If you'd like to explain the rules, Chris.
So the idea is you've got to string together players' names. And we said you can go right up to like 2010, for example. But
do they need to be the full word?
Well, I noticed that some people have done this phonetically.
Yeah,
but I think it will work on the podcast.
That.
Okay, no, you can like, decide
like,
if they...
Like, you decide for this. Someone's put Paul Ifill into Phil Gilchrist. Into Christophe Dugarry, into Gary Palace. So he's just using the final syllable.
Yeah.
I don't think that counts.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All right.
I don't think that counts.
I still think it's worth reading out because it is excellent.
Well, okay, I'm going to read one out which is borderline. Michael, I think you're the person to judge whether this counts. Is this allowed? Paul Ifill, Phil Gilchrist, Christophe Dugarry, Gary Pallister, Stern John Collins John, Jean-Francois Perron, Ronaldinho, Dino Baggio, Giovanni, Neil Ardley, Lee Chapman, Manuel
Rui Costa. Absolutely not. Like on every single level. We'd be here all fucking year if we allow that. I think you have to at least attempt to join the name to the name. We might allow one tenuous one if it's slightly creative and it just extends the link.
Okay.
But I don't think you can do that. No way. No.
Here's a seven in a row from Adam Miller. Michael, will you allow this? Pierre Laurent, Laurent Robert, Robert Lee, Lee Collins, Collins John Spencer, Spencer Pryor.
Love
sensational.
It. Perfect.
Sensational
that,
work.
There we have. We have a seven from Adam Miller. That is currently our leader. Also amazing to use Collins John and not to use John Collins.
Astonishing.
Because it would have boxed him into a corner. So it's lovely to see.
Can I just say as well, someone sent us one in where they used the referee. I will not allow that.
Okay. Thank you for listening. Robbie Slater.
See you later.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.